So I've talked a lot on this podcast about sellers who've gotten into a cash flow crisis that was easily avoidable if they knew just a few things. They unfortunately learned the hard way that e-commerce businesses have much more complicated financials than other businesses. The fact that you incur expenses on inventory several months before receiving it as revenue makes it really easy to be catastrophically off on your financials. 1 month will look insanely profitable, then the next will be losing money, which obviously leads to inaccurate, poor business decisions. I see this happen far too often. So that's why today's podcast partner is Cinder. Cinder is a powerful tool to manage cash flow and ensure you have accurate financial information you can use to make key business decisions. They have multi-channel data in real time across Shopify and other platforms, including Amazon, automatic sales and expense categorization. They even help you set up and monitor financial KPIs at work so you can find hidden streams of revenue or products that are draining profits, which is a really important piece. And finally, the piece that people don't really like a lot of the time to do themselves, simplify the tax filing and to close your books to reconcile in just a few clicks. If you want to check them out, use the coupon code EASYBOOKS to get access to 1 month free usage, which saves more than $40. That's EASYBOOKS, all one word.
This is Actualize Freedom, straight talk on growing clicks and conversions on Amazon FBA from people doing it every day. Now here's your host, digital marketing acrobat, Danny Kenji Carlson.
What's up, guys? Danny Carlson here with the Actualize Freedom Podcast, and today we're going to have an interesting angle for you guys. So quite often on this podcast, we have on people who they have their own brand, they have access to one or two brands, and that's interesting, but today we're going a different route with an Amazon agency owner with 27 employees, and he has very interesting insight into many different brands across many different categories. So we're not just learning from one person's experience, we're learning from the experience of a 27-person team across many brands, what's working in the macro instead of just one person's experience. So this is my friend Daniel Fernandez. I met him here in Bali. He was living with me here in Bali, and we have similar Amazon agencies. So we've been talking a lot over the past months, because what we do is very similar. So today we're going to be going into the perspective of an Amazon agency owner and what's working across many different accounts with Amazon. So how's it going today, Daniel?
Hey, Danny. It's good to be here. Now I saw you face to face, what, like 2 weeks ago? Now I'm on the other side. I'm back in the States. But excited to be in your podcast.
Yeah, man, and we got some juicy things to dive into today. First of which is that rebates seem to be going away, right? There's that big announcement that has got everyone talking about Amazon removing from their marketplace some of the bigger rebate companies, and what seems to be a push against the very common rebate tactic that Amazon sellers have been using for launching and ranking for a number of years, right? So maybe you want to dive into that, and then, like, what's your opinion on that whole thing? Are rebates totally going away? Like, should everyone just stop doing them? Or what is your take on the whole rebate situation?
Well, I would start saying, Danny, now being in the industry for a few years, it's interesting that every so often, you know, the sky is falling again, right? It's been in the past, you know, reviews and ranking and other things. I would say this is not new. Simply, Amazon is just letting us know what they want, what they don't want. They always keep it vague, right? So there is room for interpretation. What it seems to be the case here is that they want less of these rebates that, you know, are used to manipulate or to boost BSR. To be honest, Danny, I don't know. There is a post on the Amazon forums that came from an Amazon employee, and that I think is very explicit. But we also have, you know, the companies that are offering this as a service that they say, hey, this is going away, but this is staying. And I actually trust them that, you know, they have good communications with Amazon. So I would say for now is to, you know, keep eyes open to see how this develops, wait for these companies to see what they share. I think, you know, some of those owners are very reputable in the industry, but also realized that it's not the only way to launch products, to rank products. In fact, it's not something that we've done a lot. In my agency, we rely on what I want to call more of what Amazon wants us to do. And we've had good results with that. So, you know, it's not the end of selling on Amazon, I would say.
Yeah, and it can be scary for some sellers because their entire business relies on tactics like this, right? If you've only been launching products with rebates, maybe you're just using rebate key, and then now all of a sudden there's a, you know, rebate key has this announcement. Amazon clearly does not like something that they're doing. It can be kind of a scary thing, right? But and then there's a question too, like how would Amazon necessarily know if you're doing rebates or not? Unless, of course, you're using a company like Rebate Key, it might be easier for them to track. But if you're like a seller who has your own Facebook group or your own email list of good, solid customers, and you're rebating them on PayPal on the back end, do you think that that's risky in the sense that, like, would Amazon even know that you're doing it still?
Dan, let me tell you something. I actually, so before I moved to you know, now I'm in America, but before I was in Bali, and then before that, I lived in China for 3 years, also running my agency from there. And I got to meet a lot of Chinese sellers. You know, I got to meet the white hat ones, the gray hat ones, and then the as black hat as it gets. And I met a few times some interesting people that they were completely black hat agencies about review. You know, they were basically selling the service of getting reviews for your products. And these, they were so sophisticated in terms of the amount of knowledge they had about the Amazon algorithm for suspending accounts that had done, you know, illegal reviews, right? So they had figured out how many reviews you should get, you know, fake ones, how fast, how to do it properly, you know, as a percentage of your sales. They also knew that reviewer, specifically, they needed to be a diverse group, right? Like they couldn't all be for one zip code of these, you know, these buyers. They needed to be quality buyers. There's so much into it. Like I'm only scraping the surface, right, of what they knew. So, you know, with that being said, right, even they were having issues sometimes, right, with that level of sophistication. Amazon was creating trouble for their businesses and sometimes for their clients. So that tells me Amazon always has the upper hand, right? Like they, you're saying search, find, buys, you know, may go undetected. I don't think so. I think a lot of us underestimate what Amazon actually knows, what the amount of knowledge you can get with data, right? Like it's very easy. If you know that on Amazon, every product in that category on average gets, you know, 30% of search, find, buy purchases, 30% of PPC purchases, and then let's say 40% of external traffic purchases, right? And then all of a sudden in a week, the search, find, buy, you know, cohort maybe becomes 80% of all their purchases, right? Then for somebody at Amazon, it's very easy to set up an alert and then to go manually and check and then to take further action, right? So, and that's just us with what we know from the outside, right? So I would say to not underestimate Amazon. I would say it's easy to figure out what Amazon wants. And also at the end of the day, I'll share with you, you know, this is the one, I forgot who used to say this a lot, one of those, you know, business books, but, you know, pigs get fat, hogs get, you know, slaughtered, right? Like, people that abuse these type of things, they'll get shut down eventually, I think. Maybe it's okay to do it a little bit here, a little bit there.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good way to look at things, is that things are more sophisticated than just getting around things. Like in the early days of the internet, for example, on Google, you could rank easily with Google SEO by getting a bunch of keywords and then making the text the same color as the background, and then putting it on the bottom of the page so no one sees all these keywords stuffed in there, but the Google algorithm would, right? It was that easy. But over the years, it's gotten a lot more sophisticated to the point where these are algorithms that sometimes the actual staff at the companies don't really understand how they work, right? They're artificial intelligence algorithms that they have, ways of recognizing patterns and then making a decision if it fits a suspicious pattern, right? It's far more sophisticated than do X and Y and B and then get a result, right? It's algorithms looking for patterns of things that potentially are what they don't want, right? So, at least we can learn a lot from the Google SEO world, because Google is much more transparent with everybody how their algorithms work. They actually tell people changes to the algorithm and things like that. We can learn a lot from how they operate by looking at just how complicated their algorithms are in detecting what they want versus what they don't want. What do you think about that?
I would say, like you said, it's okay to say that Google is further ahead in the, the notion of dealing with black hat, right? And then removing hacks and loopholes into something that is more what they want, right? I think Amazon is catching up to that. But if we follow the trajectory of Google, right, we know black hat, things that, gray area, maybe, rebates. To me, it sounds a little, it always sounded to me, my personal opinion, a gray area, right? So if we just follow the trajectory of Google, we know at some point that will be stopped, right? Just like it was at the beginning with, incentivized reviews. So I would say it's, learn from what's happened before. And, but there are the Amazon wants PPC. Yes, they make money with that. And, yes, maybe they make too much money, but that's also one of the ways you grow on Amazon. And you also, can make money, right? Amazon wants you to have a strong listing. And these type of things are, they're not tactics. You mentioned tactics before. These other are fundamentals, right? And the fundamentals don't change. If they ever do, it's very slightly. So people that depend on tactics, depend on hacks to succeed, which a lot of Chinese sellers I met in China did, right? And that's why their businesses, they were maybe doing very well, and then something changed, they went down. Whereas, a lot of clients we have, in the US, not necessarily, no, I'm not saying that people in the US don't do black hat, but a lot of them that were, not interested at all in anything black hat, and it's also something we don't offer. I just like to know what's out there. I think, are more stable sellers.
Yeah, definitely. It makes a lot of sense. So what should sellers be focusing on if they're doing rebates and they had to stop doing rebates today? Let's just assume that they could no longer do rebates. Then what do you think is the next best way to launch products today?
All right. Well, I would say we can get very specific. Right. If we want to break it down for the beginner, intermediate, and also for the expert, perhaps we'll be able to get some insight from here. First is find a good product, something that has an itch, something that is better in some way than it's in the already on the market. Maybe it's a multi-pack that has more quantity of the same thing but at the same price, right? Or maybe it's a bundle. You put two things that combine, increases the total value, right, of that purchase. Or maybe it's a product that you have modified to be better than what's existing before. So that will never change, right? Like, the market doesn't care about your needs, right? The market cares about their needs, and if you can offer something better, you have an opportunity, right? So I would start there. Second is, all right, so you got the product, you have made some improvements to it. What is next, right? So now you need traffic, right? You need people to see that product to buy it. And also you need reviews. I would immediately get that product, not to get too much into the specifics. There's brand registry. So probably you have already that brand. If you don't have it, Amazon has a program to get trademark through them. And if you do, brand registry becomes available very quickly. So now there's no excuse, right, for new sellers to not get brand registry. So I would do that because you'll be able to get your new product on the Vine program immediately, right? And that's 30 up to 30 reviews that you can get right away. We on our with our clients, we get pretty much every product we launch, we get them on Vine. And yes, it was free for a while. It recently just became a paid service, $200. That comes to about $6.67 per review in the US. I think it's totally worth it. Is what Amazon wants. It's quick, and usually the reviews are good. And if the reviews are not good, read them. You know, it might tell something about your product. A lot of these people, yeah, you know, every now and then you may get a bad review that is not fair, but a lot of times they are, you know, and that's tough sometimes to admit. So, Vine, you get your 30 reviews, then, you know, kind of talking a little bit in different order, the steps, but, you know, you want to know for traffic, what keywords have search volumes on Amazon that are very targeted to your product, right? Like perhaps, you know, you want to go for these keywords with hundreds of thousands. And there's tools out there, we don't even have to say the names, that gives you this information that is very, it's not exact, but it's very reliable. So you don't want to go for the high, you know, those six-figure search volume a month keywords. You want to go for lower than that to be realistic, right? Because the higher the keyword, the more budget you'll need. I would say go for some, get a variety of keywords in, you know, four-digit or low 10-digit in terms of search volume. Once you have found maybe 10 to 20 of those, and there's not more than that, right? Your main keywords, the you know, it's funny when I talk to sellers sometimes, you know, they talk about long tail. Hey, we need long tail or we need more keywords, right? Long tail keywords have a room in the strategy. Right now we're talking about main keywords, right? So 10 or 20, then you want to launch your PPC ads. And it's as easy as targeting those 10 to 20 keywords, right? The first 2 weeks, some people say more, but first 2 weeks, there is some kind of honeymoon period with Amazon where ranking will never be easier than that, right? So I would, you know, run these ads and those keywords. And at the beginning, you're not looking for ROI. At the beginning, you're looking for conversion rate, right? Who cares about ROI? You know, at that point, when you don't know if the market resonates with your product, right? So, you know, if you launch those ads and then you see that nobody's converting and you get a decent amount of clicks, right? Then, you know, ROI is a dream. It'll never come, you know, it'll never come, right? But if you get to that point and then those initial keywords, your product is converting for those, and you put a generous budget, you put a generous bid at the beginning just to see if it converts. If it converts, then it's worth it to start optimizing for the next step, right? And then for the next step, and then eventually for getting ROI. So I know I, you know, talked a lot there, trying to keep it like a little bit, you know, sequential. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I really like what you said about there's not more than 10 or 20 keywords that you should be targeting, because that's a very common misconception that people have, is that they need to be stuffing in as many keywords as possible, when the reality is, you probably know this very well as well, is that there's very rarely more than 10 or so main keyword phrases that are getting any significant amount of traffic. And yes, the long tail keywords, the variants of those keywords are going to get some traffic, but those are going to be things that get you, you know, 2 to 5 sales a month kind of thing at the very most. They're not going to, like, the main drivers, it's very few, very rarely more than 10 or 15 or so phrases that are driving 90% plus of the traffic, right?
Yeah. And Danny, I want to, you know, share something. Once again, we don't do any black hat. I know a lot about it. And big part of that is, you know, thanks to living in China and then, you know, being part of the Amazon seller community there. You may have heard about this too. You know, there were some people there that were selling internal reports from Amazon, right? About not like for the advanced sellers out there that know how a search term report looks like for PPC. Imagine that, but not just for PPC, but for overall sales, right? Like to see exactly how many sales and what percentage a product was getting for a specific keyword, right? I got to see some of those reports, and exactly like you said, right? The 98% of all sales for some of these top products came from maybe, 10 to 20, sometimes 10 to 30, in some of those bigger categories on the few products that I saw. And that is coming from Amazon, right? Maybe not coming in the right way. Not something that anyone listening to this should look for, right? That's cheating, that's wrong. And I think even now it's got some people in trouble, even in China. Won't get into the specifics, but to summarize, yes, it's at the end of the day, just a handful of keywords per product, per niche that make it, that make it rain, so to speak.
Yeah, and there's a few reasons for that too. One of them is Amazon auto-suggest, right? So people are lazy, right? They're gonna type in earbuds, and then Amazon auto-suggest is gonna suggest the most popular searches for earbuds, and they're gonna press one of those, right? So that's a big one. And two, you gotta understand that people are lazy, right? Most people are not gonna type in earbuds with little green point on the tip or some weird specific thing like that. They're gonna type in earbuds first, and if that doesn't get them what they want, they're going to type in, Bluetooth earbuds or something like that, right? And especially if someone's typing on the Amazon mobile app, they don't have a keyboard to type in a long tail keyword with four or five words on it. They're going to start from probably the broadest thing they can think of. And then, if they don't find what they're looking for, which they usually will, then they're going to try something very slightly more specific. So when you think about it in terms of that, we're usually talking about two word phrases usually is where it stops with most people. Then we're getting into three-word phrases, and the amount of three-word phrases goes dramatically down from the number of two-word phrases that are searched. And then four-word phrases is dramatically lower than the three-word phrases. So it's you got to think about it in terms of, like, it's good to look at your own search behavior when you're typing something into Google or when you're typing something into Amazon. Like, you'll notice that you're not typing in these long tail phrases. You're almost always typing in something very concise and broad.
Right. And the biggest mistake is to think that the shoppers, right? The buyers think like us, right? Think like the sellers. A shopper, when they're searching for something, they're not thinking about keywords, right? They're thinking about what they want. They, in their mind, they're thinking about there's an image, there's a product, right? The keyword is just the small. They don't think about how many search volume, what's the search volume of the keyword that I'm about to use, or is this the right keyword for this category, right? They just like, I want something, I'm gonna type it. If I don't see what I want, maybe I'll click on something similar, right? And then Amazon is very good at offering that variety below, the sponsor product section there, frequently bought together. I think I forgot the exact number, but it was about 30% of all Amazon sales come from the suggested and the sponsored section below the add to cart button on the listing, right? It's an insane amount, and that's the genius of Amazon. The psychology is someone that's scrolling below the add to cart button. Why are they scrolling below the add to cart button? What does that really mean? It means they're not ready to buy, right? Somebody at Amazon had, a light bulb moment, like, okay, if somebody's scrolling down from the add to cart button section on a listing, that means they don't want to buy. Let's show them variety. Let's show them many products so that we retain that shopper engaged, and the chances that they might like something different, right? So that's why they show reviews there. That's why they show price, of course. And that's why they show the Prime badge, right? But yeah, you're right. So, sellers, we need to start thinking about buyers, right? And something that you do, obviously, with your agency a lot is you know, listing optimization. We do a lot of that as well. And it's so so interesting when we shift the way of, you know, the way of thinking when optimizing a listing from being sellers to being, you know, buyers, right? Like one of my favorite ones with clients, something that I think we do, you know, we do quite okay is, you know, when creating listings, one of the common issues is they're like, look at my listing, it's so nice. And then we switch it to mobile view. And then none of the text is easy to read. The images are too small. And then, you know, the person is like, I had no idea, you know, and then when you tell them that most of the traffic on Amazon comes from mobile devices, then it hurts a little, right? But it's good that there's people like you and I that know this and can, you know, bring some light to their business.
Oh, yeah, that's a really common one that we see. And another really common one we see as well is the sellers just thinking from their own perspective of what they think is good about the product. So quite often we'll see like some of the infographics maybe or their bullet points are just talking about things that do not matter to the customer at all, right? Like in the seller's mind, they like wrote down a list of product benefits and this is something they came up with. This is, you know, this benefit is really great for the customer. And so often it's just not aligned with what the customers actually care about at all. Like when we look at all the research and the data, there's nobody talking about this thing. And like, it sounds stupid. If you're actually a customer of this product, it just sounds like some dumb thing that the business owner came up with. And that's so commonly the case, right? Like, you know, it's not a benefit unless the customer actually agrees that it's a benefit. If you see it as a benefit and the customer doesn't, guess what? That's not a benefit. That's just a waste of space on your listing. And now your real benefits are competing for attention with this one you just made up because you thought it that people actually cared about it.
Right. A common situation is comparing the listing images and bullets with a, you know, Q&A section of the listing that is user generated, right? And then seeing what those questions are, people are actually asking in those questions. And then, you know, it's not obviously, you know, we're here to help clients. Just, it's interesting how many times we find a disconnect. It's like, hey, your customers or your shoppers are asking this, and you're, you know, showing information about that, right? And in deeper analysis is going into the reviews. And then, you know, something that, you know, there's tools to download all the reviews from a listing. It's very easy to do. And then something that any seller listening to this right now can do immediately is download all of that, filter reviews by, you know, 1 and 2 stars, copy all of those, you know, in Excel, all of those sales, and then throw that into a word bubble, you know, into a word bubble software, right? That will separate the words and tell you, you know, let's say battery in 1 and 2 star reviews appears, I don't know, hundreds of times, right? So then that gives you some insight, right, into what customers care. Do the same with 3-star reviews. Those are my favorite ones, but unfortunately, they're not the most abundant because neutral 3-star reviews, in my opinion, are the most honest people. Right, they tell you they're very reasonable. I love those reviews. If you filter them out, I think you're missing out. These people tell, well, I like this, but I don't like that. You know, overall, it's a good product. That kind of, I think, you know, that's the one that is not trying to. It's not emotional, right? It's just going right to the objective thought. So, and then do that with the 4- and 5-star reviews. You know, find out what people love about your product. Not to feel good about yourself, but to show them more of that, right? If everybody loves that, I don't know, your product has a handle, right? And you keep getting that, then people sometimes think, well, you know, that's already working. No, like double down on that, right? Make a headline ad on that. Put that on the images. Put that on your main image, maybe. See if you can get away with some text there. Like it's got a handle or it's the best handle, right? So, that's another thing that I think sellers can do that right away.
Yeah, that's a great tip with the word bubble. I would also urge people actually read through all the reviews too, because occasionally we do talk to people who have been looking at, you know, the word bubble, and they'll just take the whole word bubble and like copy it into the keywords or something like that. But the problem is that you don't know if they're saying good things or bad things. All you know is that the word bubbles are showing that this word came up a whole bunch of times, right? And if the most common word that came up in your keywords is something negative, that everyone says this thing sucks, and then you took that and put that into your keywords, that's probably not a good idea, right? So very important to understand the context of what people are saying in all of these reviews. Could be totally positive or negative. But there's one more thing that is so common that we see all the time, where customers or the brands are leaving out one or two really key pieces of information about the product. And maybe they don't think it's key, but their customers are looking for it. And you know that because of the reviews or the questions section on the listing. And most often that would be a technical piece of information, like the material it's made out of or the size. Like people, especially for some types of products, people just have to know the actual size to know if it's going to fit in their house or if it's going to look good with their freaking lamp or whatever it is, right? But a lot of brands just literally don't have this piece of information listed anywhere on the listing. So do you think that that's something that's important? And do you see sellers skipping that information a lot?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm trying to think, it's hard to give examples without giving away the product. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I have to be careful with that. I would say, you know, like, when buying clothing, right? When going to the mall and buying clothing, what is the most successful thing that clothing stores have done? Right? The, you know, being able to actually try on that, the clothing, and, you know, you have mirrors, because ultimately, you know, that's the most realistic, you know, to owning the product, right? So that same mindset, we should bring onto the listings, right? We need to make photos, EBC, and even the text that make the person imagine as if they already own the product, right? And touching a little bit on psychology, NLP, but when you say, yeah, know the size, like if this is a piece of furniture, it's to fit at home, or get a, you know, I would find the average home in America, because that would be most of your buyers, you know there's not a lot of space. Get like the average looking living room. Don't get a beautiful living room. No, get an average one, because that's going to be more realistic, right? More people are going to resonate with that. Get a real photo. Don't get a rendering for that. And then, you know, use, like you said, rulers, right? Rulers on that photo. Those you can draw on top, and then show them exactly the dimensions. And I would even put objects. I would put a basketball right next to it, because everybody knows more or less the size of a basketball, right? So you put one there, it puts it into perspective, and then that shopper is, for them, it's easy, there's less friction, right? It's easier to imagine, like, oh yeah, that looks like there's gonna be enough space, right, for in my living room for that thing that I'm buying. The other one is using models, and you know, the idea of using models, yes, you can use a pretty model and everything like that, but it's really to help that person, help that shopper imagine as if they already own the thing that you're selling.
Yeah, and it's difficult now because of what you just said, where you have a two-dimensional screen of people are looking at an object. They can't necessarily tell how big it is or what it's going to be like unless you make that very easy for them to visualize, like actually tell them how big it is, like show them in certain ways. We're still a ways away, but the future of that shopping is going to be augmented reality, AR. Right, there's already some companies doing that. Like IKEA has an app where you can project a new table into your actual kitchen using your phone's camera, right? And I'm sure that technology is going to be coming to the other segments of e-commerce over the next years. Maybe we'll say the next 5 to 10 years, but for now we're competing against just, it's a two-dimensional screen, and it's very challenging to show all of these different types of things on a two-dimensional screen. So it's got to be done in a very specific way, right, to overcome this one less dimension than a person would have if they actually had this item in their hands.
Right. And Dan, I'll tell you something funny. I don't know if it's the same for you, but being a you know, running an agency, helping sellers, it makes me a better buyer as well on Amazon. And it's so, I feel so good when I see a good listing. It feels so good to give them money, right? When I saw they put in the time behind it and all that, it's so difficult, you know, to buy now from a poor quality listing. I don't know if you,
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I mean, it's very important to notice your own buying habits when you're shopping on Amazon, because that tells you a lot about how you can improve your own products. So, like here, I live in Indonesia, right? I live in Bali, and they have something here called Tokopedia. It's like the Indonesian version of Amazon. And Tokopedia is very far behind Amazon in terms of development and the amount of products that are on there. So in general, the experience of the listings is quite poor. And so it's much more obvious here, the poor shopping experience that happens when you have a bad listing, because it's very frustrating. You're looking, you open up four different products, and then none of them tell you, like, show the ingredients packet. Like, that's one I run into all the time, where you're looking for a food product that's sugar-free, and none of them have a picture of the ingredients list. And it's super annoying, and you're looking all over the listing, you can't find it. And then I'm literally never going to buy that product unless there's literally no other options, and I have to, like, take a gamble, because now I'm just taking a risk. Like, I don't know if it has this feature that I'm looking for. I guess I'm going to buy it anyways, right? Now there's this, you're not sure about it, and that's one thing that's stopping you from buying the product. And me personally, I'm the type of person that unless I am totally sure that this is the product that I'm looking for, I'm very unlikely to buy. Like, maybe it's going to hover over the add to cart, be like, and then I'm just going to be like, nah, and then just click off, and I'm never going to come back.
Right. No, you like to make very informed decisions, especially if it's something that you know goes inside the body, right? Like that is a no brainer. And you know, I would say, so on the topic of listing optimization, I want to share a nugget that a lot of people maybe know about it. I would argue a fraction of, you know, if you're an advanced seller listening to this, I would say the majority of you are not utilizing this. And let me tell you what you're missing out on. So Amazon has this new feature called virtual bundles, where you compare product A and product B, right? And then it gives an option, it creates a new ASIN. It gives an option to the, you know, an upsell option on each listing, right? And a lot of times they don't get that much. They don't get that much engagement. They, you know, people buy them here and there, but it's not a game changer in the sense that these virtual bundles will start, you know, move a lot of volume for your business. But if you dissect an Amazon listing, if you also pay attention to what I said earlier, most of the sales on Amazon, no, almost, sorry, 30% or so of sales on Amazon come from that section below the add to cart button that has two rows of sponsored products and they're frequently bought together. Well, if you launch virtual bundles for all your products, it pushes down that section and it goes right below your add to cart button. And it's a massive, like a thick section that is basically creating, you can think of it as creating a wall between your competition, which is in that sponsor section, and your add to cart button, right? So, you know, applying that is been great for us. Again, not because we're selling more, but in a way we're selling more because we're keeping more of that traffic without having them see competitor ads, because the moment they click away from your listing, they're not coming back.
Yeah, and that's so important too, because I mean, the numbers don't lie, right? 30% of all sales on Amazon. And if you think that your customers are not getting distracted, like, you're completely wrong, right? Like, people very often are on the top of your listing and then you need some more information, or they're going to scroll down to see the reviews. But guess what? On the way to go see your reviews, they have to scroll past all of those products, like, you know, 5, 10, sometimes 15 products before they actually get to the reviews. And if you don't think that that's a problem, I challenge everyone listening right now to go open up Facebook or Instagram with the intention of doing something specific, but first scroll your news feed for 2 seconds and then try to come back and remember what you were actually doing before. And you will understand exactly what I'm talking about. The power of distractibility of when something else pops up in front of your face is just, especially on any online platform like Amazon or Facebook or Instagram, it's just so many other interesting things competing for your attention within the span of milliseconds and seconds, right? It's so important to do whatever you can to try to stop the assault on your customer's attention.
Right. Who hasn't had that situation you just explained, right? Like, well, what did I come here for, you know? When going on to Facebook. Maybe if you want to touch on this, I mean, I think we're both millennials. We're the generation of short attention spans, right? We're the generation that, you know, rejected in a way blogs and accepted, you know, YouTube, right? Because it's so much easier just to get to play on you, right? And then, you know, attention spans are getting even shorter demographically, I think. TikTok is one, you know, example of that, or Moments and Snapchat and all that stuff, right? So if we know that that's the trend, right, the trend of the behavior of shoppers, you wanna do things so that you trigger that emotion on your shopper quickly. Otherwise, you lost them, right? I when we work with clients that are, let's say, you know, older baby boomers, they say, you know, all of this information is very important about my product. And it's like, that's great. You know, there's room for that. There's a place for that. But let's do at the very top of your listing. Let's go for the kill for that, person that has less attention span, right? Like on your photos, photo number one, photo two and three, let's put the most important stuff with using as little text as possible, using badges or using, you know, just a handful of words to cater first to that, short attention span shopper. And, you know, even if you don't like them, you know, if you don't like that type of, you know, behavior, it means a lot of sales, right? And guess what? The people that the person likes to read, they'll read. No matter what, they'll go to your image 7 and they'll get what they want. They'll go to your EBC and they'll get what they want, right? But the order is very important. What do you think?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I love what you said about optimizing for different types of customers, because some people do need all that long text and like the long form sales letter. And you're right, it is actually older people. Typically, if you're selling to senior citizens, longer form copy traditionally does work better to sell to senior citizens. But then the TikTok generation, the Gen Z or the millennials, for example, you need to go for the kill, right? If they don't see what they need immediately, they know that the other options are just right there, literally at their fingertips, like half a screen scroll away, right? And those options are probably going to be what they're looking for, or they're more likely to be what they're looking for. So you don't have that much opportunity to actually hit people with. But we're getting to the end of our time here, Daniel. I just want to touch on where things are going. Like one interesting space I think is really interesting to watch. It's unclear to me how this technology is really going to apply to e-commerce going forward. But one thing is I'm very sure of is that it is going to impact the way that people shop in a very big way. So I think it's really important for people to look at the NFT space, and very specifically the part of that space that's the most interesting right now is NFTs and gaming. So crypto and gaming, NFT and gaming is going to completely revolutionize the way the business and e-commerce works in the future. So it's just undeniable. The crypto gaming space has created a feedback loop that is impossible to compete with. So I don't know if you've seen some of these gaming startups in the crypto space, but there's one really big one called Axie Infinity, and it's a play to earn game. So people literally are playing this game and they're earning cryptocurrency that they can actually trade for, you know, real money. And some people are making $1,000 a month playing this game. Or I have a friend who has a gaming team, and he has more than $1 million of investor money to build gamers to play this play-to-earn game. And the magic of it is that now all of the gamers are owners of the game, essentially. They own assets within the game. They own real estate within the game, and like has the same value as real estate outside of the game. As people are paying $1.2 million for like the most expensive piece of real estate inside of that game, and they're paying, you know, $500 to a couple thousand per new character that they can play within this game. So they're incentivized as owners of this game to build the community of this game and bring more people inside the game. And it's just this amazing feedback loop. And the reason I'm talking about this now is because inevitably this technology is going to make its way into commerce as well, right? And in my opinion, it's going to be the future of brands, where the people who own the products from the brands are also owners, because they have the NFT, they have that blockchain component. They could be a partial owner of the brand through actually owning the products from this brand. And then now they're incentivized to be the biggest fans and promoters of that brand as well. The more products they own from this brand, the more technical ownership they have, then their assets of the brand are going to go up as well. So this is just something I think is really important to keep an eye on. What are your thoughts on this whole NFT in crypto space and how it might apply to us?
Well, first of all, Danny, I'll say you just blew my mind. You know, with that, that's very interesting. And I already see, you know, so I have some thoughts, as you were saying, I had some, a lot of thoughts of how that will be incorporated to e-commerce. One of them was that I think reviews, you know, it's an interesting thought to think of a world where reviews are in the blockchain, right? And then where a person, you know, and again, I'm not an expert on crypto and all of that. I just, my understanding is, you know, you don't want to put a fake review that will stay there forever and that can be traced, perhaps anonymously, but still traced to, you know, when it happened, right? And then if we have, I don't know, some kind of incentive, right? Like every review that you make earns you crypto in some way, right? And then these reviews are upvoted or downvoted or validated against, you know, being fake or not. If there is the right incentive there that pushes away or penalizes fake reviews and incentivizes, you know, real reviews and useful reviews, and people can make money out of that, I think that would be very interesting. And I know actually a couple of people that were working on something like that. Now, I don't know if their projects, you know, went somewhere, but it's not my original idea, I guess. So I would be one place where I would take it. I have another friend that he is working on, you know, a platform where selling on it, like imagine an Amazon where the more you sell on it, the more crypto it, or, you know, the more crypto it earns you about that platform, right? One of the things, and again, I'm no expert on this, I think like to be creative. You know, one of the problems with crypto and projects is there needs to be an intersection between, you know, the blockchain and transactions, right? Like that is where, I think money can be made. So, you know, Amazon has, or e-commerce has such an opportunity there, right? Like if you buying more of a brand, maybe like you said, makes you earn a portion of that brand. You know, if that is the proper incentive, if we compare that versus buying from a brand, but then you don't own anything, or buying from a brand and then you're promoting that to your friends, you know, just out of good faith, but you still don't own anything, compared to doing that and or owning more, I think is very clear which direction it is going to go, right? If the technology is there.
Oh yeah. And just looking at the way that the gaming industry is using this technology right now too, it's rewarding its own community for being owners too. So like people who have got in on like the first round of buying their special characters, right? They have the NFT, so it's provable on the blockchain that they own that item. And then they're being rewarded with being the first people to have access to, like, you know, they can buy things at a lower price before everyone else can. So there's like your product launch club right there. And they can access to, you know, special, unique things that maybe no one else has access to. And then that's something that's sellable and transferable too. So if they decided to sell that NFT to someone else, then that's totally transferable and provable on the blockchain. And it can go up and down in value, right? So that's just where this technology is going to be going, right? The video game industry is starting to use it now and already is seeing like really, really crazy results. Like the blockchain video game companies are, money's just dumping into there right now because the investors see the potential, how big that's going to be in the video game industry. So some things to think about for you guys. You know, maybe it's difficult to get going now, but this is not going to be that difficult to set up in the coming years. So trust me.
Right. Imagine if reviews were not anonymous, right? And then if so, therefore, once you review a product, your identity is put on the line, and this is the reviews are stored in the blockchain, so they can never be removed or changed, right? I think that would be an interesting experiment where only the honest that would make reviews really honest. Right, and then imagine if the person that bought a product, when a product is sold, those reviewers will get a little, you know, a micro commission from that because of their contribution to that product. Or if somebody didn't buy that product, right, they were incentivized also if they didn't buy because a bad review was written that was actually useful, right? I like that idea. I mean, if there's someone out there listening to this that is working on a project like that, I would love to, you know, share some ideas. It would be interesting. But I think that's a very important opportunity, because who is tired, right, of going to your Amazon listing and then seeing that Amazon removed 500 reviews from there, and you know, and this happened to us, you know, nothing wrong was done. Amazon just, you know, smashed it, right? And then, you know, sometimes, yes, there's also cases when someone says, yeah, you know, I probably did 2 reviews with my friends, but Amazon took away 1,000, right? I think, you know, it would be great if the community, right, the blockchain owned the reviews. So everybody that is, I don't know, you know, owns the token has some kind of equity there. I don't know, just some thoughts out there.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes a lot of things possible. And I think the one biggest problem with humanity in general is that, I mean, and this is something with thousands and thousands of years of history behind it, and it's still just as big of a problem today, is that once humans get a certain amount of power, then their trustability, their intentions seem to take a turn for the worse. And you can see this in like so many high profile leaders and politicians around the world, and to see how much corruption there is in governments and people of power. And more often than not, there's someone who's funneling some money out into for their own purposes out of like the tax money, for example, right? And this just is a problem that the blockchain technology solves, right? It just gets rid of the need to trust people in power, because it's going to decentralize that power, and it's going to make it impossible for people to do things like funnel money out into some other thing without it being very evident on the blockchain. So
what was the Scarface quote? You first get the money, then you get the power, then you get the girl. Was it in that order, or
I don't remember. It's been a long time since I've seen Scarface. Gonna have to look that one up again. Right. But something in that order. But in the blockchain, it's going to be you get the money, and then everyone has equal distributed power, because it doesn't have to be concentrated in people that you have to trust anymore. It can be more distributed.
So you have the power already. So you just have to get the money, and then you get the girl. It's your safest step, right?
There we go. Well, it's easier to get the girl if you got the money.
Right. Right. And you have the power. You have the power already, so don't have to worry about it.
There we go, man. Well, awesome, Daniel. This has been a really interesting interview. If people want to reach out to you or learn more about what you do online, where's the best place for them to do that?
Best would be, should be an email, daniel@amzclever.com. That's daniel@amzclever.com. You know, we work with clients. We do full account management for Amazon and Walmart now. And then we also do PPC management, but this one has to be the very, very limited spaces. And yeah, shoot me an email if you have questions, anything. Shoot me an email. Happy to chat if there's something I can do, for you. And yeah, that's the best way.
Awesome, man. Well, thanks so much for coming on here. And guys, we'll put the links to those resources in the show notes at kenjiroi.com/blog, as always. And until next time, guys, go out there, kick some ass, and go do some crypto gaming as your homework. You can tell your wife or your husband that it's business research, not just playing video games just for the fun of it. So thanks for coming on, Daniel. And we'll chat soon.
Thanks, Annie.
For show notes and resources mentioned in this episode, visit kenjiroi.com.